Welcome to Barely Audible Whisper, a weekly NPR parody podcast in no way associated with NPR, brought to you in no part by the following parody sponsors.
The Me Too Movement. The only thing conceived less than 9 months ago that Brett Kavanaugh approves of killing.
The Institute to Prevent Comedy Suicide, reminding comedy shows not to open with a combination abortion-slash-rape joke.
And the Trump University Brett Kavanaugh's Above the Law School, dedicated to the legal philosophy that the only two things that can never be prosecuted are the President of the United States and things that happened in 1982.
I am Dave.
And I am Molly, and our voices sound quiet because our mouths are being covered by Brett Kavanaugh's hand.
Stormy Daniels, the porn star who was paid $130,000 not to disclose her sexual encounter with Donald Trump, wrote a book expected to make her millions of dollars in which she discloses way too many details about her sexual encounter with Donald Trump.
Daniels describes Trump's penis like the mushroom character from Mario.
Daniels describes Trump's penis as like the mushroom character in Mario.
Daniels says, quote, "I lay there annoyed that I was getting
by a guy with a yeti pubes and a dick like the mushroom character in
Mario Kart."
More on this disgusting revelation. I met with the mushroom character from Mario Kart.
The revelation that I look like Donald Trump's penis has ruined my life. It's hard enough going through life as a personified mushroom, but at least I was an adorable and beloved personified mushroom. People don't see me as a personified mushroom anymore. They see me as their personified penis of a personified penis.
Now that people associate you with President Trump's penis. Sorry.
Don't mention it. Why should you be any different than every other single person that's seen me since this analogy became public? Everywhere I go, I induce vomit.
That is tragic.
I'm a tragic mushroom.
Sorry, bad puns also make me throw up.
My wife left me.
Poor mushroom. I still love him. After all, he's a real fun guy. But I just can't get past the analogy. Donald Trump is a cartoonish personification of a penis, and now every time I look at the cartoonish personification I used to love, I am reminded of the cartoonish personification of a penis whose penis, the cartoonish personification I love, is now a personification of.
I started going to therapy. My therapist is pioneering a new method called One Up.
The key to One Up is catching the inner star that gives you invincibility.
It's helpful, but it's a long journey. It's not like I can just warp ahead 3 levels.
Mushroom was really speeding along the track to self-recovery, but then a self-affirmation exercise spun him out of control, like a go-kart driving over a banana peel.
I am not Donald Trump's penis. I am not Donald Trump's penis. I am not Donald Trump's penis.
Unfortunately, repetition of the phrase Donald Trump's penis made me throw up.
I'm not Donald Trump's penis. I am not Donald Trump's penis. Unfortunately, repeating the phrase Donald Trump's penis made me throw up.
This is indeed a very nauseating story.
The one upside is that I have gotten an endorsement deal with a janitorial supply company that sells that weird sawdust they use to clean up child vomit at elementary schools.
How's that for supply side economics?
Well, so your own puns don't make you throw up?
Apparently not.
Well, in the meantime, I'm just trying to get to a place where I can look at myself in the mirror and not throw up.
Do you think you'll ever get there?
I'm afraid not.
That pun isn't even applicable.
But maybe one day I can move past being a tragic mushroom and return to being a fun guy. I am not Donald Trump's penis. I am not Donald Trump's penis. I'm not Donald Trump's penis.
A According to Bob Woodward's new book, Fear, former advisors to President Trump, Rob Porter, and Gary Cohen, in an effort to protect America from the president's worst and most dangerous impulses, engaged in what Woodward calls a, quote, administrative coup, in which they would steal documents off the president's desk so he could not sign them.
The only thing scarier than the fact that two unelected advisors stole documents off the president's desk to prevent the president from destroying the world is the fact that the president didn't notice.
Barely Audible Whisper obtained audio of Cohen and Porter's plot.
Help me! This folder full of documents stolen off President Trump's desk is too heavy!
Alright, hang on. Let me push this giant pile of other documents we stole off the president's desk to try and make room for this new pile of documents that consist of so many documents that even though it consists entirely of sheets of paper, it's actually heavy.
We can't just keep stealing documents off the president's desk. All of the shredders are jammed. There's too many to burn without risking a massive fire. When we first got the idea to steal these documents of the worst impulses off of his desk, I didn't think it was humanly possible to have so many terrible impulses.
Well, that was before he ordered the assassination of a world leader.
It's only a matter of time before he orders the assassination of every world leader of every country in the world.
You're being paranoid. He couldn't possibly order the assassination of all the leaders of all the countries. He's only heard of 17 countries.
It is hardly comforting to know that the President of the United States is only aware of 17 countries.
Do you want to be the one to alert him to the fact that there are more countries than more foreigners?
Good point. He somehow managed to fuck up a call with the Prime Minister of Australia. I shudder to think what would happen if he was aware there was a New Zealand.
But still, you're right. We can't just keep stealing documents off the president's desk. We're unelected advisors. It's un-American.
Hypothetically, if Bob Woodward were to write a book about this, he would call it a, quote, administrative coup.
What the hell else can we do? The president's behavior would best be described in a hypothetical Bob Woodward book as, quote, a nervous breakdown of executive power of the most powerful country in the world.
The president actually wants to relocate the missile defense system that protects us from a possible North Korean nuclear missile attack out of its strategic location in South Korea and move it to Portland, Oregon, where it would be as strategically useless as the Portland hipster is generally useless.
He's obsessed with the idea that we shouldn't defend South Korea unless they pay us. When Mattis tried to convince him that we're actually getting a good deal on providing missile defense to South Korea because they aren't charging us rent on the land we're using, he complained that the land wasn't valuable enough. But he wasn't talking about strategic value. He was talking about the property value of the real estate.
Jesus, that's stupid!
What are we gonna do if the president wanders into this room and discovers this enormous stacks of documents we've stolen off his desk?
Oh, we'll tell him it's a prototype for his border wall or something.
Do you think he's stupid enough to believe that?
Of course he'd be stupid enough to believe that. He's too stupid to have noticed we've stolen all these documents off his desk.
You ever think about just resigning?
I can't resign. The documents we steal off his desk may be the only thing preventing World War III from breaking out over a Korean real estate scheme involving a golf course with a view.
Well, what if he did something really stupid? Like, say, a group of neo-Nazis killed a counter-protester at one of their rallies and Trump, said there were very fine people on both sides.
Oh, well, I would definitely threaten to quit, but immediately back down.
Oh, if that wouldn't get you to resign, I guess nothing would.
Tariffs. Oh, boy. I would absolutely resign over tariffs.
Oh, you got fucked up values. And I say that as a serial physical abuser of women.
Yeah, what about you? You ever think of resigning?
Well, I assume I'll have to eventually, once the press inevitably discovers that I'm a serial physical abuser of women.
Can you imagine how stupid things could get if we weren't here to steal all these documents off the president's desks?
It's a frightening thought. Hypothetically, if Bob Woodward were to write a book about it, he'd have to call it Fear.
I swear, Trump is so stupid, I wouldn't put it past him to nominate Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court.
Man, that guy hates women. And I say that as a serial physical abuser of women.
Let less than an hour after press reports confirmed that Senator Dianne Feinstein, the ranking Democrat on the Senate Judiciary Committee, had turned over a letter to the FBI in which a woman claimed that Supreme Court Justice nominee Judge Brett Kavanaugh attempted to rape her at a suburban Maryland party in 1982 when he was 17, Republicans released a letter signed by 65 women who Kavanaugh knew at the time, attesting to his character and respect for women.
Many observers have concluded that Republicans must have known about the sexual assault allegations in advance in order to have obtained a prepackaged statement of 65 women Kavanaugh did not sexually assault in high school, attesting to the genuine respect he showed by not sexually assaulting them.
After the woman, now known to be Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, publicly identified herself and attested to having passed a polygraph test, a reporter for Politico attempted to track down all 65 of the women Brett Kavanaugh did not rape in high school, but as of this recording has only received replies affirming their support for Kavanaugh from 5 of the 65 women.
Joining us now for a phone interview is Supreme Court nominee and the only known human afflicted with Kermit the Frog's speaking voice, Judge Brett Kavanaugh.
I don't remember, to my best recollection, and 65 women concur.
Judge Kavanaugh, the fact that you had a pre-written letter attesting to your respect for women signed by 65 women you went to high school with, ready to be released the moment the allegation was revealed, implies that you anticipated this allegation, which begs the question, why were you anticipating such an allegation?
The point is that 65 women who I went to high school with all signed a letter that says I'm a great guy who respects women, and as a great guy who respects women, I respect the 65 women who say I'm a great guy who respects women.
How does the fact that you didn't sexually assault 65 women prove that you didn't assault Dr. Ford?
Dr. Ford is one woman. 65 women is more than one woman. In fact, it's 64 more women than one woman. I know that's hard for you to understand as a woman, but I'm willing to explain it to you because I respect women.
Does it strike you as odd, after reaching out to all 65 women who signed the letter, only 5 of them responded to Politico?
I respect women, and as someone who respects women, I think it is disrespectful to women to allege that women who don't want to come forward have something to hide.
I never alleged that.
I'm alleging that you alleged it.
Dr. Ford has stated that she will not testify until a nonpartisan FBI investigation into her claim can be conducted.
The fact that she won't come forward means she has something to hide.
But you just alleged that I alleged that women who don't come forward have something to hide, and then alleged that it was wrong of me to allege what you alleged I alleged.
Mere allegations.
Judge Kavanaugh, the fact that you obtained a letter attesting to your character before the sexual assault allegations were brought, and then used the letter as a defense against those allegations, seems disingenuous.
I respect women so much that 65 women signed a letter with respect to my respect for women, and it would be disrespectful to be disingenuous to the woman who I respect so much that they wrote a letter with respect to how much I respect women.
What is your point?
I would never misrepresent the women I respect so much that they wrote a letter with respect to how much I respect women. Isn't that right, Sarah?
Yes, that is correct. Judge Kavanaugh respects women too much to misrepresent women who he respects so much that we wrote a letter with respect to how much he respects women.
Are you pretending to be a woman?
Of course not. Judge Kavanaugh has too much respect for women to misrepresent a woman, which is why as a woman, which I am, I respect Judge Kavanaugh. In fact, so many women respect Judge Kavanaugh that there are 65 women in the room with him right now. And 65 is a large number, as Judge Kavanaugh was respectful enough to explain to us.
Really? You're in a room with 65 women?
Yes. It's a very diverse group of women, too. Isn't that right, Lapita?
Si, Señor Kavanaugh. El Judge de Kavanaugh tengo mucho respeto por todas las señoritas. Ay.
If you are, as you claim, in a room with 65 women, then you know what happens when 65 women gather in the same room.
They talk about menstruation?
Of course we do.
Yes, we've been discussing our menstruation, which, because Judge Kavanaugh is so respectful of women, hasn't made him the least bit uncomfortable. In fact, the judge was respectfully explaining that because our menstrual cycles make us so irrational, we are unable to make important decisions. Sí, y señor Cardenal también explicó to yo por qué mi inglés no es bueno that el hombre respecta a las señoritas so much that el no always means no.
To sum up, Supreme Court nominee Judge Brett Kavanaugh, who clearly anticipated sexual assault allegations, obtained a character reference from 65 women who did not know about the sexual assault allegations, which he then used as a defense against the sexual assault allegations.
I don't remember, to my best recollection, and 65 women concur.
President Trump ordered the selective declassification of selected parts of the highly classified FISA application that led to the surveillance of Carter Page. The president's detractors contend that the president's transparent politicized attempt at sabotaging the Mueller investigation is a transparent politicized attempt at sabotaging the Mueller investigation.
While nonpartisan experts contend that this is a transparent politicized attempt at sabotaging the Mueller investigation.
For more on this story, we turn to Adam Schiff, the ranking Democrat in the House Intelligence Committee and professional tattletale.
You guys, this is totally unfair. President Trump is totally cherry-picking the parts of the FISA application that only show his side of things. You guys, by declassifying highly classified intelligence, he's exposing sources and methods, you guys! You guys, this is like super serious, okay, you guys?
We interrupt Representative Schiff's whining to go live to a statement from Sarah Huckabee Sanders, White House press secretary, and what a lie looks like wearing Tammy Faye Baker's makeup.
The classified information reads, and I quote, "No collusion. Trump Russia is a witch hunt," end quote.
You guys, what Sarah Huckabee Sanders said is totally not fair. You guys, she totally ignored the redacted parts, and like, the actual highly redacted text was totally selectively declassified, you guys.
Look, Adam Schiff is obviously a whiny little bitch. His anti-Trump whiny little bitch agenda is part of the anti-Trump whiny little bitch narrative perpetuated by the anti-Trump whiny little bitch media.
You guys, the actual text has 3 redacted paragraphs before the unredacted word no, then more redactions, and then the word collusion. You guys, they declassified random words in order to form the phrase no, collusion, and witch hunt.
Look, obviously the president can't declassify the entire FISA application because the FISA classification is obviously something the president takes seriously. But obviously, if you selectively ignore what I just said about FISA classification and selectively make it to fit into what I am now selectively saying about transparency, obviously in the interest of transparency, the president declassified his favorite words.
You guys, the word witch hunt doesn't even appear in the real document. You guys, President Trump declassified individual letters on the document to spell out the word witch hunt, you guys? You guys, he also forgot to declassify the letter T in the word witch because he's a horrible speller.
Look, I've already addressed the fact that Adam Schiff is obviously a whiny little bitch.
I am like so super serious, you guys. You can't keep letting Trump do this. You guys, history is going to judge us for this, and history is going to be like super mad at us. Like, seriously, you guys? I'm being, like, totally for real, you guys.
Look, I refer to my previous statement regarding Adam Schiff as being a whiny little bitch.
You guys, I'm telling history on you, and you're gonna be in so much trouble with history! Seriously, you guys, seriously!
Bitch.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and South Korean President Moon Jae-in agreed to a vague commitment to begin a, quote, era of no war as part of a 3-day bilateral summit. The agreement includes a vague commitment from North Korea towards denuclearization in exchange for unspecified American concessions, which is weird because America did not participate in the summit.
The inclusion of American concessions in an agreement America was uninvolved in making is an American negotiation tactic perfected by President Trump in his follow-up to The Art of the Deal, entitled The Art of Not Knowing What the Hell is Going On Around You.
Barely Audible Whisper obtained a recording of a conversation between Kim Jong-un and Moon Jae-in, conveniently spoken entirely in unaccented English.
Well, this is a little weird.
How dare you say little? I'm not little, I'm big.
I just find it a tiny bit strange.
I'm not tiny. I'm huge. 4'2" is very tall for a full-grown man.
What are you talking about? I'm just saying it's odd that we're signing a deal contingent upon American action when America's not here to negotiate their own involvement in their behalf.
I know, I heard you. I wasn't not listening because I was too wrapped up in my own insecurity about being short. Because I'm not short. And I'd have to be short to be insecure about being short. But I'm not short. I'm tall. I'm as tall as Donald Trump's hands are huge. We talked about that in Singapore.
Like I was saying.
I'm so tall that everyone I meet in North Korea tells me I'm tall, even though they are taller than me. That's how you know you're tall, when people taller than you tell you you're tall.
I'm just a little slightly concerned that...
One time, a tall guy didn't tell me I was tall, so I had him killed.
If we could focus on...
Dead people aren't tall.
Shut up about being tall and focus on what I'm trying to tell you.
Nobody's ever told me to shut up before. Probably because everyone I talk to is afraid I'll have them killed.
Well, you can't have me killed because that would start a war that would get you killed.
I don't like talking to people I can't have killed.
Well, that's too damn bad.
People who aren't afraid of being killed are rude.
This treaty's very vague. I just want to know what concessions you think that you can extract from America.
I can get whatever I want.
You know you can't have America killed, right?
Of course I know that. People who aren't afraid of being killed are more than just rude. They're condescending.
How can you be so sure you can get whatever you want from America?
Because I'm a third-generation unstable authoritarian narcissist, but Donald Trump is America's first unstable authoritarian narcissist, trying to impose his unstable authoritarian narcissism on a country that is still resistant to his unstable authoritarian narcissism.
So,
Trump has an insane haircut, and Americans make fun of his insane haircut. But I have an insane haircut, and therefore every man in North Korea has the exact same haircut.
So you're aware of how dumb your hair looks?
Of course I am. And deep down, so are my people. They can't possibly look themselves in the mirror every morning and realize they look like a 10-year-old boy who took playing barber too far. But they are so conditioned to accept my crazy that they convince themselves that there is nothing more stylish than looking like they just cut around a wad of bubblegum.
But what does achieving favorable negotiating terms with America have to do with the fact that your hair looks like a bowl cut fashioned from a hastily superglued broken bowl?
Until every American male is made to walk around with a comb-over that looks like a ferret that died from exposure to toxic blonde hair dye, Trump will never be able to match my crazy. And in a high-stakes game of crazy chicken, brigades of bad bowl cuts will always defeat the lone dead ferret comb-over.
Oh my god, I'm doomed!
Good. So you understand my bizarre haircut analogy that perfectly explains the strategic advantage of crazy impulses not boxed in by rational society. I was afraid my advisors were only pretending that made sense, out of fear of being killed.
No. Your analogy's insane. I stopped paying attention and started reading Bob Woodward's new book, and I exclaimed that I'm doomed because I just read that Trump wants to move South Korea's missile defense system to Portland?
A missile defense system in Portland will be more strategically useless than a Portland hipster is generally useless.
That's why the book is called Fear.
I guess I've been overthinking the crazy angle. My real advantage is that he's stupid.
The use of the okay hand symbol as a secret gesture for white power has bubbled up twice this month. First, a Coast Guard member on the response team to Tropical Storm Florence got suspended for flashing the hand sign on camera, and second, Brett Kavanaugh's law clerk appeared to flash the sign behind him at his hearing.
The three splayed fingers, when oriented properly, create a W, while the circle of the thumb and index finger and the line of the wrist form a P.
When it is oriented improperly, the symbol instead looks like QW.
Quarrelsome Wasp.
BM.
Bowel Movement.
Or DM.
Dipshit Motherfucker.
Here to take us through the history of the appropriation of this symbol is our symbology expert, novelist Dan Brown.
As always, our Dan Brown impersonator is Dan Brown.
Actor Dan Brown here, once again portraying novelist Dan Brown. Dan Brown, the writer/actor, goes by Daniel Carter Brown professionally for the express purpose of not being confused with Dan Brown, the novelist. Yet here we are. Coincidence? I think not. My voice sounds different because it is unsafe for me to attend Barely Audible Whispers recording session to give you this information. It is definitely not because I'm on vacation and recording this on my cell phone. Many reports regarding the OK sign as a symbol meaning white power will point to a 4chan post instructing followers to spread the rumor that it is a white supremacy symbol. Why do this? Because it will make leftists look like lunatics. But dig deeper and you'll find a preponderance of evidence of known white supremacists using the symbol, evidence that predates the 4chan post. So what is true? When did the OK sign start to mean white power? Is it all a hoax? Was it originally a hoax, but the hoax went so far that the meaning is now entrenched? Or was it always a symbol, and the post about the hoax is the hoax? What better way to make it impossible to call out those using the symbol than to provide evidence that it is a hoax?
No matter how the symbol came to mean white power, it is indisputable that it sometimes means that now, and sometimes it's just a symbol.
We now take you to a local Republican home where the father has just discovered a text wherein his son used the OK emoji.
George H.W. Reagan Atlas Shrugged Smolensky?
I swear, Dad, I'm changing my name the day I turn 18.
What is the meaning of this?
What are you doing on my phone?
You texted your friend, DLR Hempstash, who I've never met before for some reason. Yo, when we meeting up? And then the OK emoji?
Yeah, we've been meaning to chill sometime.
You think I don't know what this means?
Yeah, I was kind of hoping.
Son, I'm a Republican. I've seen it all. And in order to build a coalition in our local politics, I've had to make some unsavory friendships.
Libertarians?
And worse! So I'm aware of this little symbols and the codes.
Look, Dad, I don't know what you think you know, but I just meant OK. Like, it would be OK to meet up.
You could talk to me. I understand the temptation. You're at a confusing point in your life, and searching for something that makes sense.
Well, yeah, and...
And this! People like DLR Hempstash, associating with them might make you feel good. Like you're better. Like you think your mother and me aren't as good, and you can't talk to us. But think about your family. Think about who you're hurting.
I didn't think I was hurting anyone.
You're associating with people who believe Jews are evil, or blacks are inferior, immigrants are criminals. How are they not being hurt by this hatred?
What? Hatred?
I love you, son. And no matter what you do, we love you. Know that. I want to help you escape these cruel beliefs.
Oh, shit. You think that's a white power OK symbol?
Isn't it?
No, God. Dad, I was just trying to buy some weed.
What?
Yeah, like fingers holding a joint, see?
Get out of my house!
Thank you for listening to Barely Audible Whisper, made possible by the following people. Writer, producer, and co-host Dave Baldwin, co-host and actress Molly Brown, actor, writer, and definitely not on vacation Daniel Carter Brown, and actors Robin Ward and Michael Morgan. Thanks again for listening. Please like us on your social media and follow us and share us and subscribe and all those good things. We appreciate you.
Look, I can't move all the muscles in my face. This job is really bad. He hits me. Look at my eye. I wear this makeup to cover up the bruises that I punch myself in the face for. Good night.
Hubris.